Before long, we'll be where it would have taken mankind millions of years of learning to reach.
And what will Mitchell learn on getting there? Will he know what to do with his power?
That's the big agenda here, is undermining the whole idea of journalism, and that's the real thing to worry about.
The good old Ministry of Truth has another outlet.
Too often, broadcast radio insults your intelligence instead of respecting it, improving it, challenging it. But not here. Where knowledge is power, this is Powerful Radio. This is 30 minutes of information and inspiration. This is the Ministry of Truth. Hello and welcome to the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stepinchuk. On this episode, we'll hear an interview with Shirley Rubinstein and her role in an extraordinary story involving the Ethical Humanist Society, a disinvited speaker, an arrested videographer, and the conviction of that videographer on suspicious charges. But now, a selection of news about media and democracy from the show Media Minutes.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news related to media and democracy. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement.
Decisions made by the Federal Communications Commission over the next few months will determine whether the public will have a say in the future of the Internet. The only thing that can match the torrent of corporate money raining down on Washington, D.C., is a huge show of public support for Internet freedom.
It was standing room only at a public forum in Minneapolis last week as FCC Commissioners Michael Copps and Mignon Clyburn and Senator Al Franken took the stage. Senator Franken.
I believe that net neutrality is the First Amendment issue of our time. Unless it's freedom of religion, which until last week I thought we had kind of worked out. Today, a blog can load as fast as the Wall Street Journal, and if the blog is good, it can get more traffic than any media conglomerate. But if bigger companies can pay for faster priority internet access, that blogger no longer has a shot. And these big companies know that when they pay for access, they win.
Calling the internet an incredible technology that intersects with just about every challenge confronting the United States of America, Commissioner Copps warned that the present danger is that big business will put us on the road to the cannibalization, cableization, and the consolidation of broadband and the internet.
Now, I suppose you can't blame companies for seeking to protect their own interests, but you can blame policymakers if we let them get away with it. Deal-making between big internet players is not policy-making for the common good. Special interests are not the public interest, and stockholders are not the only stakeholders. I will not settle, you should not settle, for gatekeepers of the internet striking deals that exchange internet freedom, yours and mine, for bloated profits on their quarterly reports to Wall Street.
Commissioner Clyburn largely attributed the success of the internet to its open infrastructure. She compared the internet's democratizing effect on society to that of the printing press.
I say without hesitation that an open internet is indeed the great equalizer. It enables traditionally underrepresented groups, like minorities and women, to have an equal voice and an equal opportunity. It allows any connected individual to distribute their idea to a global network or run their business right from their very own home. Just as a printing press dramatically reduced the price of publishing and disseminating works on a large scale, the internet reduces the barriers to entry for new players.
The forum was co-hosted by Free Press, the Center for Media Justice, and Main Street Project. Dozens of people from all walks of life spoke passionately about the future of the internet.
Affirming net neutrality is critical because without it, our communities won't have the ability to tell their stories and know that they'll be heard.
I'm here to urge you to implement the Universal Broadband Plan and pass strong net neutrality rules because if telecoms are allowed to run the internet without regulation, they'll have the power to snuff out independent media.
Companies such as Quest, AT&T, and Verizon have received subsidies and tax breaks to build out the infrastructure, but they squandered their money by handing it over to their shareholders at the expense of their now antiquated networks.
Any sort of two-tiered internet that frames the internet as more of a mall than a town hall is completely unacceptable.
We need net neutrality for your human rights.
Please let information flow freely across the internet.
I'm glad I got a chance to talk to the FCC. I'm sorry it's the two members that probably don't need to hear the message that I want to say, but I've really been mad as hell for quite a number of years in the way that it has sold out the public interest to the commercial interests in this country, and it's got to turn around, and I appreciate your efforts to do that. But who said that the FCC's role is to maximize the profits of Verizon and Google?
Fundamentally, I think net neutrality is a question of freedom, and I want an internet that is as free as this country is. Thank you.
You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit freepress.net.
You're listening to The Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stepanchik. We now feature an interview with Shirley Rubinstein and her role in an extraordinary story involving the Ethical Humanist Society, a disinvited speaker, an arrested videographer, and the conviction of that videographer on suspicious charges. The following interview was recorded on Tuesday, August 31st, 2010. We are joined on the phone by Shirley Rubinstein. Shirley Rubinstein is a former social worker currently in private practice in the Chicago area and is a former member of the Ethical Humanist Society who is joining us on the phone in Chicago. Shirley, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Mitchell.
But you're a former member, as I read in your bio here, of the Ethical Humanist Society.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a group that not a whole lot of people may be familiar with. So let's begin by asking, what is the Ethical Humanist Society?
Okay. I thought that the Ethical Humanist Society was an atheistic society, which I've learned that they're not. But I am an atheist, and I'm a non-believer. And so I thought that this society was a logical place for me because I am ethical and I'm a humanist. So it felt right. I was a greeter, and which meant that I would pass out the programs and greet people when they came in. And so I would do that on Sunday. And that's it.
But you are a former member of the Ethical Humanist Society. Why did you leave?
Well, I left under what I would think of as unhappy circumstances. I had received in the mail, as a member, I received a notice of the forthcoming lectures that happened on Sunday mornings at 10:30 at the Ethical Humanist Society. And so I saw that on November the 1st in my October newsletter that Samsara Taylor, whom I didn't know at the time, was going to be talking about morality without gods. And that seemed just right for me because I had felt the programs were getting a bit light, much more entertainment-oriented. And so this sounded like a serious program, and I was very much looking forward to going to it.
Tell us a little bit more about the speaker, Samsara Taylor. Who is she, and what does she do?
Well, I don't know what she does, but she is a communist and a revolutionary communist, and I don't know if that had anything to do with why she was disinvited, but she was disinvited by a member of the program committee of the Ethical Humanist Society. So I don't know what she does except that. She speaks and she has spoken with other members of other faiths or people of faith to, you know, universities and all over the world, actually. So she has really been a very powerful advocate for morality without gods. And that's what she was going to talk about.
Was there any sense as to why she was disinvited from the Ethical Humanist Society? Was it just a matter of disagreement, or was there just an honest disagreement, or
something
further?
That's something that's really hard to for me as an ethical humanist to understand, because she had received a letter that was sent to all of us from the society, saying it was written by a member of the program committee, that she was disinvited. They didn't say that, but that's what the word is. She was disinvited, and she was not going to be able to speak. And she already made plans and all that, you know, to come to this to the city, because she doesn't live in Chicago. And she was going to come here for that for that purpose.
She came for the purpose, but she was going to not be able to speak. Obviously,
right.
That could be a recipe for disaster if a speaker comes and expecting to speak and suddenly they can't.
Well, you know, it is a recipe for disaster, and that's exactly what it is. She did a workshop the day before, and the videographer, who was Gregory Koger, was he filmed it, and it was at the society, and about 50 or 60 people showed up, and it was a wonderful program, and it was about women's liberation and all of, you know, so it was very good. And then what happened was that she was disinvited to the November 1st meeting. I think this was October 31st, maybe, that she gave the talk on Saturday before the Sunday program. And I had said that she could speak at my house at 11 o'clock instead of 10:30 at the Ethical Humanist Society. So I had opened up my house for that, and I wasn't present at the society on November 1st.
But nonetheless, she was slated to give this talk. Mm-hmm. She was disinvited.
Yes, she was.
It sounds like that sparks may have flown. What exactly happened?
Well, she was disinvited, but she came and she said on Saturday that she was going to speak before they had gotten two peace Corps members to speak instead of her. So she was going to come and make a statement, and also to let people know that she was going to be giving a talk, her talk, Morality Without Gods, at my house at 11 o'clock, and that anybody there was welcome to come, and that she had been disinvited from the society. And that was what she said. And her photographer, her videographer, was there filming her and only her. And apparently the president of the Ethical Humanist Society had told him to stop and to put his camera down. And so he did. He put his camera down, and he continued to photograph her with a cell phone. And so this was, the president of the society did not ask him to leave, and he didn't ask her to leave. And that would have been criminal trespassing if they had said they were going to stay. So that's what happened.
And then
Gregory, the videographer, mm-hmm. was arrested by an undercover policeman who was there and a uniformed policeman who was on his other side, apparently.
Why was there an undercover police officer present at these events?
Well, you know, I had gone to a board meeting, and they had made a statement. Now, this wasn't a vote by the whole board, but it was a statement saying that they would have an undercover policeman there. And I think it was because this person, Sansara, was a communist, and that's what I think was happening. And so they said that, and at that same program, at that same board meeting, they had told the person who had invited her, who was a member of the program committee, he was off the program committee, and they voted on that. They didn't vote on the other part, which was to have an undercover policeman there. And also, they didn't vote on a letter that had been read that somebody from the society thought that they should not have the children at the Sunday school present. And when I asked them why not, they said that they didn't think it was a good idea to have them. And somebody from the audience said, well, you know how they are. And I said, who? And she said, communists. And I'm not a communist, and I'm an ethical humanist. And I resented that. She said that they had that feeling.
Nevertheless, this mm-hmm. gentleman, Gregory Koger, who you've mentioned as a videographer, got arrested uh-huh. for what sounds like were...
Well, they said criminal trespassing and a battery and resisting an officer. And there was a jury trial because Gregory was brought to trial. And he was asked, or his lawyer, I guess, wanted a jury trial instead of a bench trial, which would have been just the judge. And so he had asked for a jury trial. And Gregory was convicted on all the charges, and he is now in jail. He is in Cook County Jail.
So let's just back up to review here. A gentleman for who apparently did no trespass, but may have done the minor transgression of videotaping at a time when it was kind of controversial to, was nonetheless charged with criminal trespass, resisting arrest, and battery, even though the criminal trespass charge is dubious, and the resistance and battery charges are non-existent.
Right. Exactly. Well, that's absolutely true.
Then why were those charges pressed if there was no evidence for them?
Well, there was no evidence for them, but I believe that the judge was biased against Gregory. That's my belief. That's what I think.
How would the police have known that? Or did the what role did the police play in far as the charges here, never mind the bias of the judge in this case?
Okay. Well, the police, you know, as I say, I was a witness, so I couldn't see the police as witnesses. But one of the policemen said that Gregory had pushed him. And absolutely, my witnesses who were there said that never happened. So the police were lying, and I believe that's true.
But nonetheless, it's a cause for concern. At the very least, there's a dispute. But nonetheless, charges were brought, pretty serious charges. But if there's no evidence for them, you would imagine that they were dismissed. Were they dismissed?
No, they weren't dismissed, and the judge revoked the bond for Gregory, and so he went directly to jail. He's in jail now.
And he was charged.
He's in Cook County Jail, and he's charged with all. He's charged with all of the charges. All of the charges. He was convicted by the jury of all the charges, and he's now serving time in jail.
Despite the fact that there seems to be precious little evidence for any, never mind all, of the charges for which he's been convicted.
Right. Well, it's the criminal trespassing charge mainly, because if without that charge, I don't think that the battery, the resisting the officers, would have come into place if the dropping the charges would have happened.
Is there any sense as to why the judge in this case acted in this way?
You know, I don't think so. I understood that several of the statements that were made by the defense attorney were overruled, and she was very much for the prosecution. And she had been, I think she was biased against a defendant to begin with.
Is there any sense?
He had been, incarcerated at a young age. He had been in jail when he was 17 years old, and he had transformed himself in jail. He really did, and he now has a paralegal career. And he has a job, and he's a wonderful young man.
But nevertheless, it seems like that this gentleman, Gregory Koger, the videographer who was convicted on these non-charges, because of his past...
I think so.
Past history, that the judge apparently...
And she knows that, right? She knows that, and that is yes, I believe that that's true. And there was no question about whether they could enter or not, because it was it's a public place, but it's owned by the society, and there was somebody who was, passing out information about how to get to my house. And that person was allowed on the premises to telling people that Sansara Taylor would be talking at my house, and she was going to be coming there.
So if Gregory Koger has been convicted, what are the details as far as how long he'll be in jail?
Well, he'll be in jail now, at least until the sentencing, which is next Wednesday. We don't know right now. We don't know how long he'll be in jail if the judge decides that that's what he wants to, what she wants to have happen. Then he'll be in jail for probably at least 3 years that I know of. But I don't know the answer to that question about how long he'll be in jail.
But we'll know when the sentencing takes place, or shortly thereafter, at least.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. We'll know next Wednesday, on September the 8th, at Cook County Court. Oh, it's just very upsetting.
In the light of everything that's happened here and this extraordinary story that's unfolded, for which you've played no small role here, what are your feelings about all of this? I mean, certainly there's a matter of regret, of choices, of some courage, certainly. What's your take amidst all everything that's unfolded here?
Well, my particular feeling is that it's just been another example of lying on the part of judiciary and law enforcement. And I feel really bad that Gregory is in jail, and I can't even tell you how bad I feel. It's just really sad.
How have you been acting on his behalf, or have you?
Well, I've been acting in terms of the ad hoc committee. I've been involved with them, and we've been having meetings every 2 weeks at my house, and Gregory has been at all those meetings, except the one yesterday, which he was not, I mean, this past Sunday, which he wasn't at because he was in jail. And what we're trying to do is to get the judge to lighten up.
Hmm. What have been the particular things that you've done to help dissuade the judge?
Well, we're sending a petition around, and the petition is to the judge, and it asks for people to come to the courthouse, and the address is www.dropthecharges.net, which doesn't exist anymore. I mean, the name needs to be changed to the ad hoc committee for a reason.
The fact that you're calling for Drop the Charges, and you had name the website Drop the Charges, but now it's kind of a misnomer because of the charges having been, you know, led to a conviction.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
But nonetheless,
but we haven't had a chance to change the website yet.
And so the URL remains dropthecharges.net.
Right. That's where we want people to respond. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and people can go there to respond in various ways on his behalf.
Yes, they can. And what should come up should be the petition and the signing of it. And people could do that.
Let me conclude with one general question here. It seems like that a number of actors in here are kind of, I guess, can be faulted for their own particular biases. Certainly the Ethical Humanist Society, however misnamed that organization may be. Certainly the judge at the sentencing here. There are these players here for whom someone may go to jail for up to 3 years because of these preconceptions that they have. But it seems like that part of the whole lesson of this entire saga has been to try to steer oneself away from preconceptions. What are the thoughts that you have related to preconceptions in this whole affair?
Well, I believe that preconception has been a very important part of it. And the preconception of the judge has been very, and of the members of the society too, who have prejudged and preconceived. And your question is a good one, but I don't know the answer to it. You know, there is no answer to it.
We've been speaking with Shirley Rubinstein. She is a former social worker currently in private practice in the Chicago area, a former member of the Ethical Humanist Society, so-called, who's been speaking to us about a saga involving a disinvited speaker, an arrested videographer, and that videographer possibly facing up to 3 years of jail term for a minor and non-transgression and bogus charges. Mm-hmm. Shirley, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you, Mitchell.
That was Shirley Rubinstein, recorded on August 31st, 2010. Gregory Koger's sentencing hearing will take place on Wednesday, September 8th, 2010, at 9:30 a.m. at the Cook County Courthouse in Skokie, Illinois. The address is 5600 West Old Orchard Road. More information on his case is available online at www.dropthecharges.net. And listeners can also contact the Ad Hoc Committee for Reason, which is supporting Gregory Koger. You can do so via email at adhocforreason@gmail.com. That's spelled A-D-H-O-C, the numeral 4, R-E-A-S-O-N, @gmail.com. A motion to reinstate bond has been filed, and Gregory Koger's conviction will be appealed. The committee also has a petition urging the court not to give Gregory Koger jail time and to reinstate his bond. That's also linked online at dropthecharges.net. Listen to all past episodes of the Ministry of Truth online at www.szcz.org. That concludes this episode of the Ministry of Truth. Special thanks to Mario and the staff of WHPK Radio in Chicago. Thank you for listening.